is one bell of the afternoon watch. And then this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our weekly visit together. The first lines of the Coast Guard marching song, which we all learn starting on the first day of our time in the Coast Guard. In my case, my first day as a cadet at the Coast Guard Academy in New London, Connecticut, are from Aztec Shore to Arctic Zone to Europe and Far East. The flag is carried by our ships in times of war and peace. And your captain has indeed carried the flag, flags plural, in times both of war and peace. Actually, Coast Guard cutters carry, if they are commanded by an officer who holds the president's commission, they are showing three flags. The first one, of course, is the national ensign. The second one is the Coast Guard ensign, known colloquially among Coast Guard people as the short stripes. And the third is the captain's personal pennant, the commissioning pennant, which tells everyone that that ship is under command of an officer who holds a commission, holds the commission from the commander in chief. The greetings today go out not only to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world, but in particular to those who must listen to me by streaming. I have listeners in parts of the world where the broadcast arrives in the middle of the night, and in order for them to be able to listen to it, they have to go on to the stream. So we broadcast live and unscripted on the Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band, and we stream live all over the world on voiceofvashon.org. So particular greetings go to those who are in Singapore, and to those who are all the way around on the other side of the world, in the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and in Sweden, and for all I know, countries as well in that in that particular time zone, Greenwich Mean Time. The binnacle list brings with it this week some good news, in the sense that no one has departed the binnacle list by crossing their particular bar, and some improvement in a couple of Captain Joe's people of whom I am aware. A sequel to one of my binnacle list entries of last week was that after the broadcast, I had a telephone call from my friend Bernie, who lives right across from me, across Puget Sound. And I reported last week that Bernie had received a very disturbing and very serious diagnosis. And so we talked a lot about that. And what came out of that was we talked maybe for, maybe an hour, 1 hour of the evening watch. And what came out of that was a commitment on Bernie's part to follow my wish, my hope, my desire, and my command from the captain's chair, that all hands who are on the binnacle list are, as always, in the palm of my hand, and also will follow the instructions of the medical practitioners. And Bernie is fortunate in that his good lady wife is a RN, registered nurse. And I don't think she cuts him much slack when it comes to the question of following the instructions of the medical practitioner. The other thing that happened during the week was that I chaired the monthly meeting of the planning group for Low Tide Celebration. And after that, I had the opportunity to have an old friend come alongside and give me a report on what is happening in her family, where a very serious diagnosis was converted into a success story. without going into the medical details, it'd be enough for me to say that a number of experimental things were tried. One of them apparently has worked, at least for now. And it is always my hope that these experimental forays into the unknowns of medical science produce some good results. And that's exactly what has happened here. So for all of you who are on the Binnacle list and you are faced with a very dire diagnosis, and you're presented with the opportunity to participate in some experimental operation, I hope that you will seriously consider that. Take it up with your entire medical team. Take it up with your family. But seriously consider it. Because sometimes those things actually work. And that means that we are given the gift of time. I've said many times on this broadcast, and will say it many times over, that when Mary R. died, now almost 3 years ago, that I was given the gift of time, and I'm trying, and not always succeeding, in not squandering that particular gift, but to use it as well as I can for the good of as many people as I can work with or are willing to listen to my pontifications at great length, but hopefully also to acquire some of the experience that I have learned over a long life. So one of the things that also actually happened during the night, you all know that I am particularly partial to orange cats. My sailor is an orange cat, and I always will have an orange cat in my inventory. So I was got up in the middle of the night to, make a head call. And I had the lights off. I know the course and speed to the head from my bunk, and my foot squished into something as yet unidentified and not expected. Now, you all have to realize that when it is time for tattoo and then taps, and I decide to rest my eyes for a little while before it's time to get up for the mid-watch, that sailor gets up with me and he tucks himself into the replenishment station, which is right up by my chest. But he was missing when I got up to make this head call. Turn on the light. Expend some electricity. Look down, and I found that, uncharacteristically, Sailor had had an episode of seasickness, and there was the corpse, the remnants of a mouse which he had consumed. Now, Sailor is not much of a wildlife killer, but apparently he could not resist the temptation to take out this particular mouse on the outside. And then he brought it inside the house. So I tell you this story so that should you, any of you out there, any of Captain Joe's people who have animals of any kind who are in residence with you, that you may want to turn on the light before you make that nocturnal head call. If I had done that, then I would not have spread mouse all over the place, and now I have to get down there with some suitable suji. Those of you sailors who know what suji is, it comes in either a powdery form or it can come from a block, which is shaved off with your knife that also has on it a marlin spike. And so I'm going to have to suji down that deck to get the remnants of the mouse up sailors pretending that he had no part in it, but it was only he because Ellery doesn't do anything like that. There was a Evergreen ship out in the federal anchorage right off of Captain's Quarters last night. And if she had still been there this morning, I would have gone to Marine Traffic and gotten her nomenclature and reported on her. But being slothful, I didn't even look her up on Marine Traffic, and she's gone this morning. But she is clearly one of the Evergreen ships because she has Evergreen painted in very large letters along her side. And she was loaded with containers waiting to get alongside the container port in the Port of Tacoma. But that reminded me to go to the magazine for this week, which is the Professional Mariner, the Journal of the Maritime Industry. Well, I'm not so sure that it's the complete Journal of the Maritime Industry. It is, however, one of my favorite publications, and I am a longtime subscriber to the print edition, not the one that you get online, the print edition. And it had an article in the big section called Signals, and the subtitle is Maryland Authorities Clarify Phone Policy Following the Ever Forward Grounding. Ever Forward is the over 1,000-foot-long container ship that was run aground under the influence of her pilot. Her captain had laid below. And this happened in what to me is known as Craig Hill Reach and is now shown on the nautical charts as Craig Hill Channel. A parenthetical insertion is that if you'd like to look at the nautical chart in very small size, but you can blow it up with your computer program, type into a search engine the words nautical chart, Craig Hill Channel, Baltimore, Maryland, and it will bring up the NOAA nautical chart that will show the approaches to to Chesapeake Bay, and then on a separate chart, the chart that takes you all the way up into Baltimore Harbor. There are a number of charts at various scales that cover all of this, but the one that you want to look at is the one that includes the place where Ever Forward ran aground. I'm very familiar with that. My much-loved Northwind was home-ported when I first relieved her in the Coast Guard Yard in Curtis Bay, Maryland, which is way, way up in the deep midsection of Baltimore Harbor. And when I was deployed on very short notice to the Great Lakes, I had to get underway in a 00 fog. And at this point, I want to pay tribute to those who sit in front of radar scopes, because it was 00 visibility from the time that I cleared my berth in the Coast Guard Yard, worked my way through the bridges, made all of the turns, and had gotten myself headed south in Craig Hill Reach. This was before there was a vessel traffic service there. And as we were headed south, my Combat Information Center, CIC, my radarman, as well as my own, I had to con myself because of the weather, could see nothing, could not even see the forecastle. The fog was so thick. And so I had to con myself. And as we were working our way, I saw on the radar scope and was immediately informed also by the fog navigation team in CIC that there was a ship headed upbound coming up Craig Hill Reach as I was headed down. I got onto the radio, captain to captain, and I said, "Captain, I'm headed down, and I'm over on the right-hand side, the red side of the channel, and can you hold off coming up until I come out at the bottom and get into the open water and clear?" And he said, "No, Captain, I'm already, this is pilot." Pilot came back, and he said, "No, Captain, I'm already committed. I'm headed up." Not very wide in that channel. If you call up one of those charts, you can see how wide it is. And so we got very close, and of course, the radar scope on the bridge was telling me how close we were, and CIC, the radarmen in CIC, were telling me this one's really going to be tight, Captain. So we got almost nose to nose, and I put the helm over and I went outside the buoy line. And I was able to do this because I was very light. I was headed to the Navy fuel facility at Craney Island in Norfolk to fuel in order to head up to go through the St. Lawrence Seaway and into the Great Lakes. So I was really light. I was drawing probably 24 feet, which was a very light draft for that ship. And so I was able to get outside the buoy line, and boy, we went by so close. And as the upbound ship went by me and I went by him, the southbound ship, after we had cleared each other, I got on the phone on the radio and I said, "Pilot, that was closer than I ever want to be." And he said, "Captain, you're absolutely right. Glad I am that you were able to get outside the buoy line, because I wasn't able to do it." So ever forward, she works her way south, and it turns out that her pilot was doing the same thing that many people who are operating motor cars do. He was messing around with his phones, his telephone, and he was not using it on ship's business. Apparently, the telephone had been confiscated. A warrant had been issued for the confiscation of the phone, and they were able to figure out who he had been talking to and what he'd been talking about, and it was not ship's business. And so while all this was going on, and he's communicating with whoever it was, but it wasn't the vessel traffic service, and it wasn't, and the captain wasn't on the bridge. So the senior ship's company was the third mate. Now, third mates don't really interact very much with pilots. Pilots are highly experienced people. They are masters themselves. They have sailed on their master's license, and they are really experienced people. And I've talked a little bit before about some of my interaction with pilots, which was not always happy. In any case, pilot was, imagine his delight when he feels as ever forward puts her bow up on that shoal and keeps driving, because she was going southbound at about 12, 13 knots. F still equals MA in this world. And so she got driven up in there, and she stayed up there for a month. Fortunately, she was off to the side so the traffic could get around her. But I tell this story because it is emblematic of people who allow them to be themselves to be distracted from the task at hand. And his task, his only task, was to get that ship safely down the Craig Hill Channel and out into the open bay, and then to keep on going. He was headed down, I believe he was headed to Norfolk. So that means that he would have had to go through the roundabout. I've talked a little bit about the roundabout. And if you take a look at the approaches, the nautical chart for the approaches to Chesapeake Bay, you'll see that roundabout. So all of these things tell us that even the most experienced and most professional, in this case a pilot, can be distracted by things which should not distract him. And because of that distraction, and because of his insistence on using the handheld telephone, what I call the Andy phone, my Andy phone, was caused him to no longer be allowed to pilot ships. And I would suspect that his license is being held in suspense. There'll be more on this as we go along, because the story is not over. But in any case, the book this week is one of my favorites. It's one that I think maybe I've talked about before, but it's Carolyn Alexander's Endurance. And Carolyn was writing the book and collecting the photographs when I was in the final stages of the completion of the Shackleton Memorial Library at Scott Polar Research Institute in the University of Cambridge. And she was collecting photographs from the Institute archives. The Institute is the repository of many of the original Hurley photographs, the wonderful photographs that Hurley took as Endurance was breaking up and then just before she sank. And a lot of the other information that was original with Sir Ernest Shackleton. And although Carolyn's book was published in 1999, and it was the beginning of the Shackleton mania that went through the entire world, because right after the publication of Carolyn's book, there was an exhibit, a traveling exhibit, about Shackleton and about Endurance. But the photographs, the book itself is lovingly and beautifully produced, and I recommend that if you've not read it, that you get it out and get a copy of it, borrow a copy, or go ahead and buy one, because buy the bound copy, not the paperback. Get the hard copy, because it's a beautifully produced book. It's on lovely slick paper. It has wonderful photographs that are best shown in a properly bound and produced book. Carolyn Alexander's Endurance. And since we've already talked about the magazine, we're going to move on to a couple of other things on my checklist. So 8 March is either national or maybe even international. National Women's Day. I put Women's Day in the same category as Mother's Day, Father's Day, Grandparents' Day. There is no Captain's Day. Every day is Captain's Day. I put it in the same category because we should honor and treat the ladies in our lives with all of the respect and admiration and regard and affection and love that we feel for ourselves. And I try to do that. And I am not always successful. But there is a little song about it. Every day is Ladies' Day with me. That's my song for National Women's Day. Sunday, daylight savings time comes to us once again. And this year we spring forward. Spring butts up. The term spring butt comes from the Coast Guard Academy. And it may be at other service academies as well, but certainly there's a Coast Guard Academy. A spring butt is one who, when asked a question by the instructor standing at the head, the custom then, and I hope it still is, that you would jump up out of your seat, come to attention, and answer the question. In every class, there are always those who always have the answer. And in my world, they are still now, I hope, but certainly in my time, many years ago, known as spring butts, because they would always raise their hand and then spring butt, spring up. So this time we spring up, spring forward with the beginning of daylight saving time. I keep reading all these articles about places that are going to deep six, daylight saving time, and it doesn't seem to ever happen. I happen to like the idea. I like the way the days form up in when we have daylight saving time. So it's fine with me that we keep on doing it. I just use the term deep six. And for those of you who have forgotten some of your nautical terminology, I'm going to define the term for you. The deep six comes from the fact that before we had echo sounding and before we had fathometers, which measure water depth by sending a signal down to the bottom, bouncing it off the bottom, and then timing how long it takes to make a round trip for that signal from the ship all the way to the bottom and back, and then converting that time into water depth. Before we had that, all water depths were found by putting a heavy weight on the end of a piece of line, and that heavy weight was called a lead, and therefore the line is called a lead line, and the lead in most cases had a hollowed out tip, and tallow was put into that tip, and when the lead was dropped down to the bottom, the composition of the bottom, whether it was mud or shells or whatever it was, would stick to that tallow. In order to tell how deep the water was, markings were put and are today. I hope we still teach bosun's mates how to cast the lead, because that's the term, you cast the lead. And so markings were put on the lead line to indicate the depth. Every time there was a marking, there was, when you were singing out from the forecastle, the bow, the water depth, if the water was hitting one of those markers, then you would sing out to the bridge by the mark and whatever the number was in fathoms, 6 feet to a fathom, for those of you who have forgotten that. So the term Mark Twain, used in the rivers, was a marker. There is, was then, is today, a marker at 2 fathoms. And the sing out was by the Mark Twain, and Samuel Clemens adopted that when he was a river pilot. That's where his name Mark Twain comes from. So where there is no marker, it's said to be a deep. So there is no marker at 6 fathoms. And since there is no marker at 6 fathoms, but when you estimate it at 6 fathoms and you see there is no marker, you sing out by the deep 6. I hope all of this is clear to you. It's as clear to me because I've seen this done many, many times. And I don't remember any longer the markers. They are little pieces of rag. They are pieces of leather. But that's another story for another time. In any case, the deep 6 is came to mean something that we throw away. So that's my nautical arcana for today. And I have one piece that I'm going to reserve for next week. It has to do with parental rights at the service academies, and I am really unhappy about this one. So that will be a teaser to get you to listen to me next week. So this year is 22 years since the Nisqually earthquake. And when the earthquake happened here, we had just moved into our house that is now Captain's Quarters. And the only damage that my house suffered, because it is a log house, and it is not held together by any nuts or bolts or screws. It's held together by the notches on the corners. And so the house just adjusted itself. And so the only tragedy that we had was the cats went into the house for 6 hours, and they stayed there and did not come out for 6 hours. And now I have come all the way to the end of my time. Once again, this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And as always, all of you, all of Captain Joe's people are in the palm of my hand. Stay safe. Take care of those for whom you are responsible. Watch their 6. And as always, I am on station and watching properly.